You're listening to Marketplace Weekend from APM. I'm Lizzie O'Leary. We've been here in Portland, Oregon all week. Outsiders might know the city from its caricature on the comedy series Portlandia, or picture great coffee, upscale restaurants, and a downtown boom. But underneath that, Portland's wrestling with something a lot of cities face when they grow: how to stay an affordable place to live. What's different here is the law. Oregon is one of two states that doesn't require developers to set aside affordable housing when they build. We took a trip to the east side of the city to put this all in context. It was a sunny but windy morning, and we asked affordable housing advocate Vivian Satterfield to show us around.
Describe kind of the neighborhood where we are, because we're looking at a lot of little kind of, I would say, bungalows, single-family homes, and then here we've got an apartment building coming up.
It's interesting because right across the street we have what looks sort of be a mixed development. There's some retail and ground floor development here, and then looks like to be residents all above, but mostly it's a residential neighborhood.
This is a little bit of a story, this building. I mean, this is the story that we're talking about. If you build a building like this in Portland, you don't have to set aside a portion of your units for affordable housing.
Well, it's not mandated at all. So what we have are voluntary incentives under what's called voluntary inclusionary zoning, which at a really basic level just means if you want to build a new development, the city will give you, as a developer, a whole host of incentives to actually build in affordable units, anything that's not market rate.
Now, it got pretty windy at this point, so we ducked back into Satterfield's office. She is the associate director of OPAL, a local advocacy group.
We don't have the mandate, that tool at our disposal, inclusionary zoning, because of a 1999 ban. We share that distinction with Texas, only two states. It's really a tale of two cities. What we have is what some of our members and constituents call a rich person's playground in Portland, and then really the working class and the people who are here to make the coffee and fold the sheets and drive the buses, they're being pushed farther and farther out to the edges of the city, which actually was only annexed recently from the 1980s. So lack of sidewalks, lack of green space, poor connectivity, and virtually no transit service. Those are where those folks are being pushed out to.
Why is that happening?
It's happening because the inner core of the city is being developed at such a rapid rate, and because we don't have a mandate to force developers to include non-market rate apartments, therefore affordable housing, the market just plays out. And, you know, the top dollar gets to buy the top places to live in Portland.
Can't you make the argument, though, that money and capital coming into a city increases its tax base, increases its ability to provide services for all of its citizens?
You could, but there's also a lot of economic inefficiencies by having your workforce being at the very edge of the city. These folks are traveling over an hour on public transit and linking their transit trips together in order to go to their jobs. That's not only bad for our economy, it's bad for our environment.
A lot of this seems to be the conversation you have about gentrification all over the country. Is there something that you think makes Portland different?
You know, there's this Portland mentality of wanting to be authentic, wanting to do it yourself, wanting to identify with the working class, but then not really wanting to live by working class people. So I think that the creative sort of we can do it ourselves, we can make it kitschy is actually coming at a cost.
Tell me how you've seen that cost show up.
I've seen that cost show up in the type of people who are being displaced and having to move. My first 4 years here in Portland, I moved three times as a renter. That's an economic cost for individuals, economic cost for the entire city when folks don't have stable places to live. They're continually moving their kids in and out of schools and relocating their entire lives in such a short period of time.
Vivian Satterfield, thank you so much for talking with us.
Thanks so much, Lizzie. I appreciate it.
We reached out to various developers and industry groups all week long to hear their side of the story and didn't hear back from them. But in the past, they've argued against proposed laws to include affordable housing requirements. John Chandler, the CEO of the Oregon Home Builders Association, spoke recently with the Oregonian newspaper, saying that he didn't think politicians here were invested in changing the law. He said they're very serious about being seen fixing it, but they don't get serious about actually doing it. There's another view in Portland, which is 76% white, that a lot of this is about race.
It was really hard for me to come to grips with the history that we have here in terms of race.
That's Cameron Witten. He's a community activist here.
Even now, you're looking at the Portlandia image. You're looking about how I'm a sober cycling vegan. And there is that image that people come here for. They hear about, they visit, they move, and that's celebrated, that's lifted up. And at the same time, I've personally seen erasure, like actual invisibility and silence of these communities that have been marginalized, who have identities that have not been celebrated in the same way that we've celebrated all these other things about Portland.
You can laugh at me, but, you know, I do look from the East Coast vantage point and I think, oh, yeah, Portland, that's you know, plaid shirts and coffee and bicycles. And it does have this kind of idyllic Pacific Northwest image. And a lot of the stuff you're telling me undercuts that.
Yeah.
Why do you think people outside of this area don't know that story?
I like to say there's two reasons. One is Portland is the major white city in America. There is no other city of this size that is as homogenous as this area. And so I think it's very easy for people who have been marginalized to be silenced because we are still a huge minority in this population. The other issue really is a marketing, a cultural issue. And I like to bring up Portlandia a bunch. I know a lot of friends who act in that, and that's lovely to see. But people move to Portland. They come to visit Portland, and they really come with the expectation or the assumption that it's one big Saturday market where we bike around naked everywhere and we raise goats. And it's really hard to combat that because there is no financial incentive for us to be talking about the fact that people live here and they find it harder and harder to get by.
Oregon is only one of two states in the country that doesn't mandate, including affordable housing, you know, when you build. How do you organize people to do that? It has failed and failed again here.
Yeah, it's super tragic. We currently, as a community, haven't prioritized how do we have inclusive affordable housing. Like, that needs to be a big issue. Rents went up 6% last year. That's not something everybody knows. Like, we aren't watching that the way we need to. So we really need to create a movement that involves the community and also is targeted to working with our decision makers in order to get this repeal to happen.
Cameron Witten, thank you so much.
Thank you, Lizzie.
And that brings us to the weekend number. It's 239. That's how many dollars, on average, it takes to buy 1 square foot of housing in Portland. That's according to Zillow. The online real estate listing company says the average price of a home here is $299,000. That's up almost 7% since this time last year.